Welcome to another episode of Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Mendel, I am John Schmelk. The phone number for you is 201-939-4513, or if you prefer, on Twitter, at hashtag Giants Chat. Folks, we got nothing to do today but take your call, so get on the line. We'll give you a lot of time to chat. We'll go back and forth. We'll have a little bit of fun as well. Same thing on Twitter. Get on the hopper, and we'll talk some Giants football. And it is mandatory minicamp week. I know people make a big deal about it, as I'm not trying to soft serve it here, but it's really just a continuation of the type of work, Lance, they're doing in OTAs with a couple of differences. One, they have a little bit more time with the players, and number two, this is mandatory.
Yeah, the days will be a little bit longer, as you noted. Ben McAdoo spoke about that on Friday when he met with the media, and it's obviously mandatory in terms of wanting everybody to be in the mix, because this is the last opportunity, John, for them to set the tone for what they want to put forth in training camp. They're going to break for 6 weeks. It's the time of the year where everybody can go their separate ways. They can work out on their own. Guys can get in a vacation here or there, and then they're going to be up and running late July, early August to prepare for the season, and then you're going to have the preseason game. So this is when you want to at least set the tone for this is what we're going to be focusing on for that month period as we get set for the season.
And we wrote about this in Cover 3, which I'm not sure if it's up on Giants.com yet, but I'll make it is. You can go to Giants.com, check out Cover 3 with me, Lance, and Dan Salmon. We kind of write what we're what players I think have the most to prove in mandatory minicamp, yeah, or we're looking for, something like that. And the point I made in the story, in my answer to the question, was that to me this is a big time for the rookies, because in the last 3 weeks, and of course in mandatory minicamp, that's when Darian Thompson earned his first team reps when training camp started. He already won those reps at this time of year. And I think it's important for the rookies to show that they're not going to be a liability in terms of understanding knowledge and knowing the scheme and what to do. And I think if the rookies and even, you know, the undrafted free agents and maybe new acquisitions can show that they understand the scheme that they're being asked to execute, it will give the coaches more confidence to put them in situations come training camp where they can earn a starting job, roster spot, whatever you want to talk about. So to me, Lance, that's what I think this type of stuff this week is important for, to see if you can translate all that classroom work they've been doing almost 8 hours a day into what you're supposed to do on the field. And then, like you said, this is a precursor to training camp. It'll show the coaches that they're ready to roll once the pads go on in early August.
Well, getting back to your point, Evan Engram, when he spoke to the media on Friday, he was talking about how the game has already started to slow down for him a little bit. He seems to not be thinking as much because he's understanding more and more of the playbook. So this is another step in terms of his progression. And he's been heavily involved, if you've watched, obviously, what's been going on in OTA. So they want to continue to see that he will develop and make an impact with Eli Manning.
Yeah, and I did mention Evan Engram specifically, actually, in my Cover 3 answer. And the point I made is that in the past week or so, in the last four practices, and I think even in the final practice of the third week of OTAs, that would be OTA number 987, that would be OTA number 6, Odell Beckham Jr., Evan Engram, had a lot of passes being thrown in his direction and really was being targeted a lot more than he had in the practices prior to that. And I don't know this for sure, but to me, that's probably a sign that he's learning, he's running the right routes, he's being in the right spot, that the Giants quarterbacks have the confidence to throw him the football.
Well, and I think that he indicated, based on what he said, that he feels he's being more and more involved, especially with the fact that, you know, Rhett Ellison is still dealing with that calf injury.
Which is killing him, by the way.
So they're trying to at least not overdo it with him, which means, in all likelihood, John, that the rookie is going to get more reps in addition to some of the other vets in the mix. But I do feel as if the more and more you listen to Evan Engram, it just feels as if that this is not being too big for him. He's not feeling overwhelmed, which, of course, doesn't indicate everything until you really get the pads on and see what he could do under those circumstances. But just the mannerism in which he's handling himself, this just doesn't seem like it's overwhelming or anything like that.
Absolutely not. What was your answer to that Cover 3 question?
I went with somebody from last year's class. I would agree with you in terms of rookies. I went with B.J. Goodson.
Okay.
Because I think he's another guy that seems to be getting more and more comfortable. When the coaches spoke last week, they seemed to indicate that he took some significant steps forward. And, I mean, let's face it, he's got a legitimate shot to secure the middle linebacker starting job. So you combine all of those factors, I think he has an awful lot to gain during the course of this mandatory minicamp.
Absolutely. And, of course, you have a lot to gain on today's show, too, folks. If you give us a call, 201-939-4513. We promise calls early and often. We might as well start right now. Let's start off with Jay over in jolly old England. Hey, Jay, how are you?
Hey, what's going on, guys? How you doing?
Doing well, man. Jay. What's up?
All right, so guys, it's kind of long-winded, but I kind of want to start it off just talking about a story that I have. So I remember, do you guys remember the whole affidavit issue with O.C. Urimura back in the day when he wrote that statement for the Brady versus NFL and the ramifications of that and the way the fans' perception and how they kind of blackballed him, the fans themselves kind of blackballed him, talking about, well, we should trade him, he's a cancer in the locker room.
What did he write? Jay, honestly, Jay, I don't remember what you're talking about.
Well, the only thing is Brady, if I'm correct, wasn't Brady versus the NFL something to do with when they had the collective bargaining agreement issue and then Brady sued the NFL on behalf of a number of players? So I understand that, but how does OC get connected to this?
Statement.
Yeah, so, what did
he
say?
The ramifications of it was it was bad on the fan side.
Okay.
And I remember going to the London Giants game previously with my wife, and I met OC, and I told him, hey, I'm a big supporter of you, big fan, and during that whole incident, I knew you was getting a lot of backlash and everything from fans. He's like, yeah, I know, I read a couple of stuff and everything. I just want to say, and I tie that into Odell with the whole him missing the offseason and all stuff. It's OTAs, people. It's not that big of a deal. And if you think about it, it helps Ingram out. It helps Brandon Marshall out because they get more targets. Like, it's not that serious. Him missing the OTAs is not going to be the end-all, be-all of Odell Beckham as a Giants. And the reason why I say that is because there's reports coming out that it's contract-related and all that stuff. But if he shows up to mandatory minicamps, then guess what? It's not contract-related, or at least that's not what it is right now. So I'm reading a lot of stuff from fans. I'm like, well, trade him. He's a malcontent. He's cancer, locker room cancer. He's immature. Listen, this kid's going to come out. He's going to have another 1,000-yard season. He's going to put up another probably 8 to 10 touchdowns, and you're not going to be worried about this nonsense during the middle of the season. So just relax, calm down, enjoy the off season, and just take a chill pill. You know, I just want to say that to the fans. And it just kind of pissed me off, just reading a lot of stuff that was going on. I just figured I just want to talk to you guys about that. And that's really it, honestly. You guys have a good day.
Hey, you too, Jay. Appreciate it.
Appreciate the phone call.
201-939-451. You don't have much to add to that. Let's go to Frank in Rockland County. He's up next. Hi, Frank. Frank, you there, pal?
Hey, how you doing?
Doing well. What's up, man?
Brooklyn?
I'm sorry?
This is Hudson.
Oh, hey, Hudson. How are you, man? What's going on?
Not much, guys. How you doing, Lance?
Doing well, Hudson. What do you got for us?
Right. I just wanted to bring up one guy that I noticed was being spoken upon a lot by one of the players this past weekend. I was watching some video on Giants.com from Casillas, and a couple of times I noticed he mentioned Avery Morse and how he flashed doing OTAs. And I went back to listen to the archives and listen to one of the coaches or announcers from Youngstown, and they spoke about Avery Morse. And I think that's a guy to look at to possibly leapfrog ahead of Aquara or be right there with him as the third defensive end.
Yeah, Hudson,
to get playing time to relieve these guys.
I'm not sure right away, just because he's a later round pick, so I'm not sure you can ask that from him in September. But I've said on the record here on the show that I would not be surprised if he's a big part of this defensive line rotation by the time you get to the bye week. I think he has the tools to be a fairly versatile guy. He could play inside, maybe even play, you know, play outside, maybe even play inside a little bit. And I agree. I think in OTAs, as much as, you know, you really can't see much because the pads aren't on with the linemen. But I agree. I think he has flashed here or there. I've seen him in the backfield on a few plays showing some quickness. So I would not be surprised if Avery Morse does give you maybe a little bit more than you would normally expect out of a fifth round pick.
Well, and what you were alluding to, Hudson, I mean, Patrick Graham, who's the defensive line coach, spoke highly of him, said that obviously he's been working very hard. But then again, I think you got to see what Romeo Okwara brings to the table in his second year. I mean, remember, he flashed towards the latter part of last season. Kerry Wynn is still very much in the mix. There's a few other defensive ends, and I granted they've been here a little bit longer than Avery Morse, but I just wouldn't count them out until we see perhaps what they do when they get the pads on come training camp.
Okay, John. I noticed, John, you mentioned him being a fifth-round pick. Is that something that would hold him back from leapfrogging? Or if he flashes early and he proves to the coaching staff doing mini camp and preseason games that this guy who was originally drafted, played for Nebraska, he could you know, leapfrog these guys since Aquar was an undrafted free agent.
No, I don't think being a fifth-round draft pick would hold him back. I'm just judging by the fact that he lasted until the fifth round, and that tells me that he's probably more of a guy that will take some time to be ready. Now, he could totally blow those expectations out of the water and be ready sooner than that. That's certainly possible. I just always, whenever you pick somebody on day three of the draft, Hudson, in my mind, I'm always of the mind that that player is probably going to take a little bit while to get ready. Otherwise, you know what? They would have been a second or third round pick. That's just kind of the nature of the business. You know what I mean?
All right, look at Paul Perkins last year. Perkins was a late round pick too, Hudson, and you know, he didn't really get his opportunity to emerge until late in the season as well. I could see Avery Moss following a similar path where, you know, he gets moved in and out perhaps early and then maybe carves out a more significant role in the latter part of the season. Because, you know, with most late round picks, they gotta see a few games and they have to see how they adjust into a game situation before they're ready to all of a sudden say, hey, we're gonna give you a significant amount of snaps. And let's not forget, we're coming off a season where JPP and Vernon played a significant number of snaps. Now, I'm not saying that the Giants want to duplicate that, but they're certainly not in a position where I think they want to take those guys off the field too often, considering they're two of the most productive players on the defensive line.
Very good point. Very good. Now, one last point before I get off the phone.
Sure.
I noticed over the weekend they spoke about Jaron Jones was seen playing offensive tackle. Kind of threw me off because I was actually looking at him as a sleeper to be either the third or fourth defensive tackle to make the team. Does that pretty much eliminate him from that position and more likely he's going to be put on the practice squad?
I believe McAdoo said they were using him on both sides at this point, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and that's exactly what Hudson was talking about. And what McAdoo said was they're just simply experimenting at this point in time. I mean, keep in mind, Hudson, Nikita Whitlock, I constantly refer to him. Whitlock played both sides. He was a fullback at a defensive tackle. It's not unusual for the Giants to toy with that. Mark Herzlick running tight end on the scout team. They're now in the point where they can toy with guys to see what they're able to do. But I don't really think, and McAdoo even said this, and I understand I'm paraphrasing his words, but he said, to read into guys playing on both sides this early in the offseason, I think is going too far. Let's see what happens in preseason games and training camp before we indicate that they're definitely moving to the opposite side of the football.
Okay. One more thing before I get off. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No worries.
As far as the offense go, who do you think is going to end up with more yards, Sterling Shepard or Ingram?
I think Sterling Shepard will probably wind up with more yards, but it'll probably be within 200 yards of each other. I'd probably say maybe Shepard will be around 750 and Ingram will be between like 600 and 650, maybe something like that, Lance. Does that sound about right?
I think that sounds about right. I mean, Shepard got just under 700 this past season.
Yeah.
So I could see his numbers increasing.
I thought Shepard got to 800 last year.
Did he get to 800? Let me look it up.
You know, maybe
Shepard had 643.
Oh, okay. Yeah, he did. I thought he had. Okay, so he did. He did have just.
So you know what? Actually, let me refine that. I think. Let me put Shepard around 600 and I'll put Ingram around 550. How does that sound?
That sounds great if he can do it. Do you think Marshall will get 1,000?
I'm still not sold that two guys on this team are going to get 1,000. I think Marshall's going to come just short of that.
I think he'll be around 9,950. Yeah. But Shepard at 683 last year. So I think him dropping about 100 because of the addition of Marshall and Ingram probably makes sense. Yeah. And, yeah, I agree. I think Marshall will probably be around 900, 950. And I think Beckham will be around his usual 13, 1,400 or whatever he wants.
Or even if he goes slightly lower because Ingram and Shepard pick up the pace, I could see that happen.
And Vereen being back too. Remember,
sure,
another guy you want to throw
the
ball to.
Yeah. And you're assuming also that maybe Perkins is more productive on the ground from start to finish. With an improved running game, maybe they don't have to necessarily throw it down the field as much.
And Ingram's numbers, too, could be impacted if they do use Red Ellison a lot as an inline tight end. We don't know exactly what role he's going to have. He hasn't been on the practice field since he got here. So those are all kind of things that can impact it. He went with it this way. I think Shepard and Ingram will be relatively close. I think both will be under 700 yards.
Guys, if we don't become a top seven offense this year, then something is probably wrong with the coaching staff or how they're handling this talent.
Why'd you pick top seven? It just seems like a very random number.
I was going to squeeze in five, but I was like, all right, there's a lot of good offensive teams in the NFL. If we're not top seven, I think we're better than the top ten. With all the talent we have at receiver and running back, tight end now, I see no reason why we shouldn't be one of the upper echelon teams on offense. And we're already one of upper echelon teams on defense.
Hudson, there. I'm not. I have to look it up. I'm not sure how many, if any, NFL teams last year were top 10 in both offense and defense. I will have to check it. So if
Patriots, I would have to think.
I don't know if they were top 10 in defense, to be honest with you. I'd like to see what they are. Let's look up yardage and points, Lance. I'm curious to see what the two are in yardage and points. I think the Patriots would be the team if their team did do it. But if I would just aim for top 10 on both sides of the ball, and if you do that, Hudson, trust me, things are going to work out.
Well, the Patriots were fourth in terms of yardage per game.
And thanks
for
the call,
Hudson.
And they
were third in points per game.
Oh,
yeah,
thanks,
Hudson. Appreciate it.
I'll look up their defense.
So they were
stay put.
Top five in points per game as well as yardage per game. You'll check defense
and
to see.
And I assume they would be top 10 in offense. That I thought they would have. Let's see. Total defense. Let's see what we got here.
I think there were a few teams. I feel like
we're okay, well, both. Let's figure it out. Patriots were eighth in yards per game defensively. Okay. And in points, let me open that up. And in total points, they were actually outside of the – no, that they have that – they put the worst teams up top for some reason. I hate when they
hit the
do
arrow,
that.
Too.
They were actually number one in points allowed on defense.
So there
the
you
Patriots.
Go. So they were top 10.
The Patriots were. Who else do you have in top 10 offensively in terms of yards?
In terms of yardage, let's see, because I've got the points up. In terms of yardage, you had – well, this is the wrong way, so let's discuss here. No, actually, wait, I did have it the right way. See, now you're confusing me with the defense. Yardage, you got the Saints, you got the Falcons, you got the Redskins.
No.
You know, for some reason, I think the Cowboys were – you know what? The Cowboys may have been top 10 against the run.
Well, they definitely weren't top 10 in yards. Well, they might have been top 10 in points.
You know, they may have sneakily been in there.
They were fifth in points.
There you go. So the Cowboys
– I knew it was in yards, but I thought points was a possibility.
So Dallas and New England are two teams that
– Not surprised. The two best regular season records. Who else do you have in the top 10 then?
Well, you got the Raiders. I don't think the Raiders were a top 10 in any category.
Nope.
Pittsburgh. I don't think Pittsburgh was top 10.
Well, let me look at points. They were 10th in points.
They were 10th in points?
10th in points. So the Steelers snuck into the top 10.
And Green Bay, I certainly
do
not think was top 10 in points. Arizona may have been borderline.
Wait, you guys were – Arizona was top 10 in terms of what?
Well, this is yardage. Yardage now.
And yards per game?
Yards per game, yeah, Arizona.
Arizona?
Arizona was 9th.
They were second in yards allowed per game.
Well, in terms of the defense.
Yeah.
So
and they were 10th in offense,
opposite ends of the spectrum in terms of yardage. And then the Colts were the 10th team in terms of yardage.
Okay, so you have four teams that were in the top 10 on both. You had Arizona were in the top 10 in both, which is surprising. It's such a bad year.
Yeah.
Maybe that indicates they might be due for a rebound, I think.
Well, they had some injuries, too, on defense.
They did. And turnover issues on offense. They had a lot of turnovers on offense.
That killed them. So, you know, you clean those things up. And we've seen quick turnarounds. I think with respect to the Giants, though, what Hudson's point was, you know, I could easily see the Giants being top 10 in terms of yardage, meaning moving up and down the field. The big question mark, John, is going to be, does that then equate to the execution in the red zone?
Right.
I mean, you could be an unbelievable offense that moves the ball. We've seen that. But that doesn't necessarily mean that you're scoring at the same rate that you're moving the football.
Well, and that's why points is what matters. Why don't you bring up points there for a second? We'll look at that next.
Points per game, which is right here.
Well, let me tell you who I have on defense. I have the Patriots.
So they're in the top 10 on both.
I have the Giants.
The Giants were not.
I have the Seahawks.
Seahawks were not.
I have the Broncos.
Broncos were not.
I have Dallas, which we mentioned
Dallas,
before.
Yes. So that's
the Vikings.
Vikings were not.
I don't think so. No. The Chiefs.
Chiefs,
I don't think
were
so.
Nope.
The Bengals?
Nope.
I don't think so. The Ravens?
Nope.
I don't think so. And then the Steelers.
Steelers were 10th.
So you had
three teams,
and the Steelers were just under
were
the
just
market.
Right there. They were actually tied with the Bills even in that category.
So you had three teams last year that finished in the top 10, and no surprise, all three were playoff teams in the top 10 in points. And then the Cardinals, again, in yardage was the outlier.
If you're top 10 in points in terms of defense and offense, you should make the playoffs. Something's wrong if you're not making the playoffs under those circumstances.
I mean, if you want to look at it a different way, and I think this is a very underreported number that people don't talk about enough, because I think it really has a big impact on how good a team really is, and it takes some of the randomness out of it, that, you know, bad luck that happens in the NFL, and that's point differential over the course of the year. And if you look at the teams that finished with a positive point differential of over, let's see, what's a good threshold? If you're plus 25 points or more, odds are you're going to make the playoffs. The only teams that were plus 25 or better last year and didn't make the playoffs were the Cardinals, who are actually plus 56, which is an excellent number, and they only finished 7-8-1. Yeah, it just shows you how much bad luck they had last year.
And the turnovers, too, as you mentioned.
Oh, brutal. So they were plus 56, the Cardinals. They did not make the playoffs. The playoff teams, the Falcons are plus 134. The Packers are plus 44. The Giants are plus 26. The Cowboys are plus 115. The Chiefs were plus 78. The Raiders were plus 31. The Broncos were plus 36, did not make the playoffs, but again, they were 9-7. They were very close. And then no other team that didn't make the playoffs was plus 25 or better. The Ravens were plus 22. They missed out on the playoffs in the final 2 weeks. And the Bills are plus 21, and they missed out on the playoffs.
I think this is interesting. The NFC East, if I'm correct here, is the only division last year that actually everybody was in the plus.
That's why when people talked about, oh, it's a division of mediocrity. Not last year, folks.
It was not.
The Cowboys, the Eagles, and the Redskins and the Giants, they had the opportunity last year to play the AFC North, and they destroyed the AFC North. They took them out to the woodshed.
Yep.
They absolutely demolished them. I mean, if you look at it, I mean, the Steelers were 9-3 in the conference. They went 2-2 outside. The Ravens were 1-3 outside their conference. The Bengals were 1-2-1 outside their conference. And the Browns were 0-4 outside their conference. What does that tell you? And the Giants also last year played the NFC North. And that was another situation where they just had a really good year against those teams. They just did.
Yeah, well, I mean, you know, that's going to vary from season to season, but I think that while there are defensive shortcomings within this division, whereas I think the Giants are ahead of the pack compared to what some of the other teams have to offer,
sure,
the fact that on offense, I don't think there's a huge disparity because a lot of teams have a lot of weapons means that even if you have a shaky defense, you can put points on the board, you're able to, as we've talked about this, hide some of your other weaknesses. And that's also the sign of a good team where maybe there's no balance or not enough balance, but you're able to at least do enough with one facet of your team to make up for that.
Absolutely. And I think it just starts with the quarterbacks. I mean, Dak Prescott, I know a lot of people think he's going to have a sophomore slump. I don't see it. Eli Manning is Eli Manning. Kirk Cousins, I think, has proven to be a very productive quarterback in the league. And then Carson Wentz is a second overall pick that's learning and getting better.
Coming off a rather productive rookie season.
Every other division has bigger quarterback questions than any team in the NFC East has. Top to bottom, and it's not close.
Well, like you just said, it's synonymous with quarterback play, so your offense is in all likelihood going to be consistent and productive when you have a guy that can make plays. And this is a division where, you know, we were talking about this maybe a few years ago when, you know, Romo was dealing with the injuries, the Eagles were shuffling in veterans, and the Redskins with RG3. People were saying to themselves, well, the Giants are really the only team in the division that has at least stability for the short term. Now, all of a sudden, you flip the calendar forward maybe 2 or 3 years, I mean, you're talking about the Redskins, the Cowboys, and the Eagles all have 3 young quarterbacks in place. I mean, we'll see what happens with the contractual negotiations with Cousins. They still have another month with the franchise tag.
And we'll see how the two second-year players
develop, obviously. Of course,
how
they progress.
Right.
I mean, there's no guarantee that they're locks, but to produce like that as rookies, I think, is certainly a positive sign.
Especially
you'll take
for
that.
Prescott, who had an unbelievable rookie.
Yeah. So you're at least positive or you're feeling good if you're some of the other teams. And, I mean, the Giants still have a window with Eli Manning. But, I mean, to me, this division really flipped the switch quickly in terms of, you know, how some of these quarterbacks have
come out. I think the division was stuck in mediocrity for a while. I think from, you know, when you were, you know, kind of swapping who was winning the division every year, you know, after the Eagles became dominant. I mean, you had a couple teams, you know, the Cowboys flashed here and there, the Giants flashed here and there. But it was never a top-to-bottom division where you're like, every one of these teams is formidable. I think we're hitting one of those stretches, though, right now. Let's go to Maurice in Montclair on line 3. He's up next on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Well, go ahead, Maurice.
Good morning, guys.
Good morning. How are you doing, Maurice?
Hey, I'm doing good, man. Hey, listen, Lance, I called probably like a week or two ago, and we had a discussion about guys that needed to prove something. You recall that?
Yes, I do recall that.
Yeah, and one of the guys I forgot, because I had forgot somebody, and one of the other guys I meant to name was Justin Pugh, and I'll tell you here's why, because I think Justin Pugh, when we drafted him, you know, the Giants had high hopes for him, and I think as we saw him, you know, progress in his development, and, you know, some people started to say, well, you know, he can possibly be a Pro Bowl, you know, type of offensive lineman. Well, here's the thing. I would say Pugh needs something to prove. He has something to prove this year because the Giants desperately need O-linemen, and his Achilles heel, in my opinion, has been his health. And no one ever questioned, you know, his ability. Some do, but I think the majority of Giants fans would say Pugh can play. And the fact that he's I've been reading articles that he's talking contract and, you know, some numbers and, you know, getting paid this year. So if he's going to want to get paid and things of that nature, he's going to have to prove he can first, number one, stay healthy, and, you know what I mean, produce, you know. So I just want to throw him out there because I remember we had that conversation. And just looking at the landscape of what's going on now, I'm not going to talk about the Beckham thing. My concern is that it's a mini camp now, and I think that this is a good phase for the younger guys because in mini camp you're going to see a lot more of the veterans taking over and getting a lot more to snatch. The veteran, I mean, the rookies are going to, you know, get sprinkled in, but they need to really watch some of the rookies. They really need to watch some of these veterans. And
why?
It's like algebra. I look at this time of year with OTAs and mini camp and training camp. It's like algebra. So it all builds on one another. It gets harder and harder. And so some of these rookies, man, they're going to have to, you know, watch some of these veteran guys do what they do and, you know, make the most of their opportunities. And I think when you guys were just talking about numbers and over and under thing, you know, I always like to play games with you guys, you know what I mean, pick y'all brains. So I'm going to give y'all a couple guys, and I'm going to go over and under. And I'm talking specifically about touchdowns, all right?
Okay.
So I'm going to start with Brandon Marshall. And then after you guys answer this, I'm going to go on to my next one. Brandon Marshall, we talk about touchdowns. I'm going to go 8 over or under.
That's a good number.
That is a good number. I'm going to go under, but I think it's going to be really, really
Yeah,
close.
I think it's going to be real close. Actually, if you would have asked me a prediction, I would have said 8 on the nose.
Actually, you know what? Maurice, I changed my mind. When he's been healthy every year of his career, the last 5 or 6 years, he's gone over 8. I'm going to go over 8. I think he'll get 9.
I will go over 2. I mean, I think 8 is the target number in my head, yeah. But, you know, I could see the 9 or 10 type of barometer.
The question is, how much do they try to run it in this year? Do they try to get it to Ingram? Yeah. I think you got a good number there, Maurice.
Okay. All right. So now I'm gonna go to Ingram. Touchdowns. 6 over or under.
I'll go under for 6.
No, I'll go under as well.
I think he'll have 4 or 5.
Wow. So you go under on that. Okay. All right, Shepherd, 7 over or under.
Under.
Yeah, I'd go under as well.
Under 7?
Yep.
Really?
I think he'll have fewer targets than he had last year, and I think last year's touchdown number was a little inflated, to be honest with you.
Yeah, keep in mind, I mean, you got Brandon Marshall, you have Evan Engram, last year you had Victor Cruz.
And they also never ran the football in last year.
Yeah.
They had so few rushing touchdowns, I think you're going to lose some.
That's 6 rushing touchdowns the entire season. I mean, you have to figure that number will at least go up. Nobody's saying that it's going to be a dynamic running game, but you figure that number is going to go up slightly.
Right. See, here's the thing. This is how I envision teams playing the Giants. I think teams are going to, you know, teams always blitz, so they're going to come at the Giants. But I think with all the weapons, you know, and Eli getting the ball.
Maurice, hold on. Why do you think teams are going to blitz? The teams rarely blitzed the Giants last year. That's one of the reasons that they struggled.
Really?
They played them to run.
They played two safeties deep and challenged them to run the ball, and they tried to get there with 4 guys and beat the Giants' offensive tackles outside. They didn't blitz a lot last year.
Yeah, you're actually right. You know, pardon me for that. You're actually right. They definitely did just sit back and then, you know, rush.
Because they had confidence. They had confidence that they could get there against the Giants' offensive line with their normal rush. And Lord knows, they don't want to leave Odell Beckham out there in single coverage. I mean, that's death.
And they're certainly not going to want to leave Odell Beckham and Brandon Marshall in single coverage
this season.
And
Evan Engram down the middle.
So, to me, the philosophy is going to be very similar. The key now is for the Giants to say, fine, take the safeties, put them in China, and we're going to run right up the gut. No, I mean, literally, now the Giants need to counterpunch this season and say, if you want to focus on our wideouts, focus all you want. We're going to run the football, and we're going to do it successfully. That's the way you make a statement. Yeah.
Okay, so my last point, I'm going to leave you guys with this. I gave you guys the over and under numbers to finally get at my point here. Eli Manning, I see, with the weapons, and like I said, when Lance took my call last time on guys that have something to prove, I put Eli in that category because, you know, the naysayers, he's getting older and stuff like that, and the fact that he didn't have his best year or whatever the case is. How many touchdowns, real quick, and then I'll finish, did Eli throw last year?
Eli Manning last year, I just looked it up, he threw 26.
Okay, so 26. So we just did the over and under, My thing is, I see Eli can throw about in the 30s this year, and I'm going to go over or under, and I'm going to leave it right at 30 for you guys, and I'll take it off the air. Eli Manning touchdowns. Passes 30, over or under.
Thanks, Maurice. Appreciate the call. I'm going over 30. I think Eli will be around 33, maybe even as high as – his best touchdown year was 35. That was in 2015. I don't see why he can't approach that because I think the Giants will score a lot more points this year than they scored last year. So, but I think they'll run it in more than they did last year too. So I go over 30. If I had to make my over-under for this year, I would put it at 32.
I'm going to go just under. I think he's more like 29.
Okay.
I could see him getting this
now,
season.
The key is getting the interception number down. And I think when you talk about – I'm never going to say Eli Manning has anything to prove. He's been in the league too long to have to prove anything. But if there's one thing he needs to get better at, it's protecting the football. And that's one issue that the Giants had last year. There were too many turnovers. And Ben McAdoo spoke about this at the Combine, if I remember right. And a lot of those – mistakes and turnovers originated at the quarterback position. So that's something that I think Eli Manning does have to get better at this year.
Well, that's the key because we can't predict that. You could be an explosive offense, and this is when I get back to the red zone execution. What happens if the Giants move the ball up and down the field and then all of a sudden the turnover bug bites them? Arizona is a team that moved the football last year, and then what happened? They got bit by a lot of turnovers. So that's still the wild card in play. And it's not just Eli Manning. It's everybody else. The other thing that I wanted to add, Maurice pointed out that he feels Justin Pugh has something to prove.
I want to get back to that,
and,
too. Go ahead.
And threw out the fact that, you know, he has to prove that he's durable. I think we got to be careful when a guy comes off a season where he misses a few games, labeling that player injury prone. And if you bring up Justin Pugh's numbers, he's played 16 games in 13. He played 14 in each of the next two seasons. And now he's coming off a season where he played 11. And the reason why I want to emphasize that is a lot of people, John, I hear say Shane Vereen is an injury prone player. No, Shane Vereen's not an injury prone player. He's coming off a season where he couldn't stay healthy.
Correct.
We have to be careful when we label players that are not durable or injury prone just because our memory shows us, well, they didn't do anything in 2016. And I think Pugh and Vereen get thrown in that category by association. But if you look at the numbers over the course of their seasons and careers, they're not technically guys that have to prove they're durable.
I mean, for an offensive lineman, missing 9 games in 3 years probably is more than most miss. And I think Justin would probably say that he wants to play more football games. And I think if he has, quote-unquote, something to prove, you know, playing all 16 games would be a nice change. He hasn't done it since his rookie season. I think that's a fair statement, but I would not call him injury-prone for sure, just like you just said. And I'd also think about his play level because, you know, he mentioned that people don't complain about his play level, and they shouldn't. Because I think even though he wasn't recognized, probably because of the struggles of the offense in general, I thought Pugh actually blocked at a Pro Bowl level last year. The problem is that he's in a conference that has some really good offensive linemen in it.
Absolutely. Well, and I also think that, once again, I think his play gets overlooked, though, John, because he missed a significant amount of games. There was that stretch, and it was right when the Giants, remember, went on that winning streak.
Knee last year, right? That's
correct.
What got him.
It was the knee,
right?
And then we saw a variety of different guards come in, and Brett Jones, he then went down. So it's hard to then pinpoint and say that Justin Pugh perhaps stood out from last season, but I would agree with you. I think, actually, if you look back at last season, he's one of the most underrated players on this roster because he probably doesn't get enough credit for what he did when he was healthy. Unfortunately, it was interrupted because of the injury. So I don't know if I'd necessarily put him in the category that has something to prove. I think it's more of perhaps a bounce-back season for Justin Pugh to get on the field, stay healthy for 15 to 16 games, and try to continue to build some continuity with this offensive line.
You know, it's funny. I'm looking at the turnover differential. These are what he said on his call and we were talking about before. And we mentioned the Cardinals before, right, about how they turned the ball over. And that's true. They did have 28 giveaways last year, which I think puts them probably
– that's got to put them pretty high, or at least
I think
near the top of
the pack. Seventh or eighth worst. They also had 28 takeaways. So they were actually a net zero last year in terms of takeaways to Cardinals. I thought they were going to be in the negative, to be honest with you. But, you know, I think that's a team that could bounce back. The team on the top of that list, the Chargers, I think that's a team. I mean, we mentioned, I think, weren't they top 10 in yards and points on offense, I think?
Chargers, they may
have close to it. I think they were there.
I still have the list up.
So I think that's a team that could bounce back this year. I went kind of back and forth with Dottino on that. He doesn't buy it. I think the Chargers can actually be pretty good this year.
Well, but with the Chargers, you know, a lot of it has to do with the running game, the offensive line.
They completely rebuilt this year,
correct,
by the way.
So, you know, you expect that to improve. And now they just locked up Melvin Ingram, who they gave the franchise tag to. You've got a new city, perhaps, you know. it helps a little bit to get out of what they were dealing with over the last few seasons.
Or does it hurt them being in a really tiny stadium with no more fan base?
Well, I mean, or you could look at it as a positive. If the stadium is smaller, whoever's going to come to the game is going to technically look like it's filled up because you don't have to fill up as many seats. I think you could spin that maybe in a variety of ways.
It actually reminds me, and it's somewhat unrelated to sports, but our buddy Brooke we went to college with, when I was planning my wedding, he said, John, let me give you one piece of advice. Make sure when you have your dance floor, it's a small dance floor. So even if not that many people are dancing, it looks like it's full.
Well, that's what I'm saying, the illusion.
Well, that's why I brought it up.
No, I think that's a fair analogy, yes. I don't know if people give out that type of wedding advice very often. It's unusual that would be the first thing that he would give you. But, yeah, I think that people are certainly thinking about that.
It was among other pieces.
Well, I can only imagine.
We'll leave it at that. 201-939-4513. Marco's in Connecticut. What's up, Marco?
What's up, guys? How are you?
Doing great, Marco. Good to hear from you. What's up?
Yeah, likewise, man. Couple things. Quick thing about B.J. Goodson. I was listening to a lot of the player interviews this week, coaches' interviews. I enjoyed them. Something that stuck out with Goodson, and it's actually unrelated to him, but I saw a lot more confident with him as potentially as a starting middle linebacker and having a bigger role in the defense. When I actually was listening to Jonathan Casillas, and here's why. Casillas, for me, it's like I started thinking about Casillas and Spagnuolo and what we used to have with Antonio Pierce. Man, Casillas has got to be one of the most underrated guys. I don't think he's underrated on our team. I think the team knows exactly what they have. But from a guy who's just – he's been around. He is just cut from such a great cloth as a leader. And I think he's going to do wonders for a guy like Goodson. I don't think – if Goodson's your starting middle linebacker, I don't think he will have the same type of responsibility fall on him like typical middle linebackers in a Spagnuolo defense. I think there's going to be I don't know the X's and O's well enough to describe what would be taken off his plate, but I just think there's so many good veterans around him that they're going to put him in a great position
to Marco,
succeed.
Does
that make sense?
I think you're exactly right. And in those same media availabilities that you're talking about last week, Jonathan Casillas called himself the co-pilot. That's what he is. He loves being the co-pilot. He talked about it a couple years ago when he had to wear the communicator. He didn't like it. And then last year he kind of got to be like the helper. And I think that's a role that he's good at. And I think for a young guy like Goodson, you're right, it's invaluable to have somebody with as much experience next to him like Casillas, who has all the type of leadership qualities you're looking for. I do think it's very helpful. I will put one little asterisk on all this B.J. Goodson talk. A big part of playing linebacker is getting downhill with pads on, hitting guys and filling holes and things like that. We haven't seen any of that yet in practice or in game situations. So until we see that, I'm not willing to, put my check on the table and slide it over yet. But I think from what we've seen so far in terms of him knowing the playbook and being a leader and that sort of stuff, I think it's all been positive.
Well, and the one thing I will add, Marco, before we let you continue, B.J. Goodson, let's not forget, he played 13 defensive snaps last season.
Correct.
Okay, do you know how many that accounted for in terms of the percentage of defensive snaps?
0.2.
No, well, a little bit higher. You're not giving him enough credit. 1.17%, okay? So the reason I'm also throwing that out is, listen, I'm optimistic. I think it's a great opportunity for B.J. Goodson, but as John mentioned, we're talking about a portfolio that is minute. It's tiny. It's almost non-existent. Let's see what he could do on the field. But I would agree with you, Marco. What you pointed out was not necessarily his production. You were talking about the mental game. And the mental game, I think he's surrounded by a very good support system, guys who have been there. Casillas, the one thing he pointed out, remember, Casillas has been with Spags going back to his Saints days. So this is now the second team where he's fully adjusted to the defense, and the fact that he knows the ins and outs right now, and Goodson's trying to get to that point, I think that's a nice complementary piece to have around a very young linebacker.
Because it's not a simple defense, Marco. Remember that. This is not a simple defense. So having a guy like Casillas is certainly invaluable.
Well aware, yeah. I'm just going to switch gears quickly on a guy who does have a full portfolio, and that's Odell Beckham.
Look at you with the transitions.
You like that?
Yeah, I'll drink to that. So,
veteran move. Well, here's what I wanted to call about Beckham. I've been listening when the callers call in and Paul has been on. Something that he has said that kind of stuck out to me was obviously Beckham has been missing, and Paul's been saying, and you and Lance, I've heard you a few times too say, listen, we're really not going to talk a lot about this a lot about this when the season kicks off or when he's in training camp and he's making great plays. And I do agree with you, but here's one thing that Paul has said. He's like, you know, well, the writers need stuff to write about right now, and it's a really low time on football. Here's what I got to say about Beckham. I drink the Kool-Aid on the Giants. I love every player on the team. I love Beckham. But the truth is, nobody's talking about Vernon missing camps. You know, I mean, Vernon, we're aware that Vernon's not there, but no one really cares too much. It's Beckham. And this is what I would say to Paul, and I don't know if you guys feel the same way. Beckham has almost become like an awkward conversation. And it shouldn't be that way, but it's become that way. It's like he is his own – he's like a juggernaut, man, on his own island. And the reason why people and writers and are so fascinated is because the last time you heard from the guy – is what happened in Green Bay, before Green Bay, after Green Bay, in the locker room, and then he just takes off all offseason and leaves. And I know it's uncomfortable for you guys that are with the team to kind of comment on this stuff, but I'm just going by what the team has, you know, what Reese and Mara and kind of alluded to after the season. So I think we can have a conversation about it. But
yeah, well, Marco, I'll put it this way. Let me kind of cut to the chase here and why I think it's such a big deal. He sells newspapers. You know, when people turn on the radio to listen to WFAN or ESPN Radio, whatever, that's what they want to hear. Since I've been here working, you know, as part of the Giants broadcast, which goes all – I mean, I was working in the studio for WFAN dating all the way back to 2003, 2004, and I've been traveling with the team since 06 and working for the team since 07. He has transcended sports. I mean, he's not just a sports superstar. He is a celebrity. I mean, that's what he is. I mean, you saw when he went to Germany, was it last offseason, I think?
On the car, yeah.
That's like, you know, Michael Jackson in the late 80s stuff right there. That's crazy stuff. I mean, this guy is just such a star, and it's I just think it's something Giant fans aren't used to because they really haven't had this type of personality on this team, frankly, since Frank Gifford was here in the 50s.
But John, that's my case in point, though. I don't want to be old school on this, but that's why he should be here, because these people that are constantly following every move he makes, it's not a good look when the last move you've made really garnered a lot of bad attention, and then no one has heard from you. So what has happened since then is people are left to discuss every single move on Instagram, every move that he hasn't made because he's not in camp. So is it a contract? Is he upset about something? Does he even like being a Giant? I mean, I've asked myself that too. Does he like being a Giant, or does he just want to be the best player in the NFL? You know what I mean? It's like, dude, come on, man. I don't know. You know what? Hey, you don't want to go to OTAs? Fine. You're like, that's whatever. No problem. But at least, why don't you go down to Duke and throw with your quarterback? Get on the same page so this team could go win a Super Bowl this year. I mean, that's just the way I look at it. It's like, that's the part that frustrates me.
Well, okay? Marco, we hear you. We understand where you're coming from.
I gotta go,
guys.
Thanks, Marco. Appreciate it.
I'll listen off.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of fans would, you know, echo Marco's sentiments, but, you know, the two things that I want to throw out is, you know, if you got to look at it from a professional athlete's perspective, it's hard for them to kowtow to the court of public opinion after everything, you know, comes out about them. I mean, just imagine if you listened to every commentator, read every newspaper. You're at the end of the day, John, you would never – your mind would explode, but here's the other way to look at it is – you're never going to please everybody.
No, you can't.
No matter what you do.
That's true.
So, you know, when I hear, and I'm not pinpointing Marco, but when I hear about, you know, you should do this, you should do that. So then he does that, but then he doesn't do the other thing, and then you have another group of the fan base irritated. So if you're Odell Beckham, and I'm just talking about any athlete, you've got to get to the point where you shouldn't take away from the team, and you shouldn't do anything to violate the laws of the CBA and anything like that. That's not what I'm getting at. But you can't live your life worried about what the court of public opinion is saying 24/7. And I think if other people at least put themselves in that spot and understand, then maybe they can understand that no matter what he does, he's not going to please everybody.
That's true. Absolutely. But I do think whenever we hear from Odell Beckham next, and I don't know when that's going to be, I think it would go a long way towards – you know, clearing the air of a lot of the speculation that's out there.
Because
I think when people don't know stuff, it allows their minds to kind of just like run wild and crazy, and you start coming up with these theories and all sorts of stuff. So I think once you finally hear from the guy, I think a lot of things will become clear.
Well, because like you said, we haven't heard any words out of his mouth, so it's all been interpretation. But this is the point that I think Marco was getting at, that I've had conversations with Paul, and I'm curious your thoughts, John.
Sure.
I've always been of the mindset that now I think it's a prevalent topic because we're in the midst of the off season. There's not a lot to talk about.
Of course.
Can you remember, though, because I can't. Can you remember where you get into like week 5 or week 6 of a season and you're talking about a guy that did not come to OTAs?
The only way you would do it is that if they like held out a training camp and then they showed up late and like pulled a hamstring or something.
Or they
like
were
that.
Out of shape and they failed the physical.
Right.
Yes, I would agree with you.
Precisely.
Yeah. But I'm talking about that we're getting to the season. So training camp's over. We're at the season point. The guy's doing what he's expected to do. Do we then revisit what happened in May and June?
No, nobody can.
Because I can't think of a circumstance. So I think this is now an example of the now. We're caught up in the now, but when it's all said and done, this becomes, to me, a non-issue.
This is a pebble in the stream. Yeah. The stream's going to keep going along the course it was going. It's just a pebble that's going with it.
Yeah.
201-939-4513. Nick in the Meadowlands. He's up next. Hi, Nick.
Hey, what's up, guys?
Go ahead, man. What's up?
How you doing, Nick?
Hey, Pugh, Lance, definitely agree with you. I think he doesn't get enough credit for what he does.
He's a good player.
And offensive linemen get hurt, you know?
Nick, and I'll tell you what, Justin Pugh, with the way contracts have been getting doled out to guards the last couple of off seasons, Justin Pugh's hard work will be rewarded in one way, shape, or form. Yep. Let me put it that way.
And I hope he's real hungry for that this year. That I hope that whole offensive line is.
Yep.
The other thing, I got a few things. Lance, I got Paul finally to acknowledge LaDainian Tomlinson.
Oh, well, congratulations. Because
it might be number 10, but it's in the top 10.
Yeah, because after you had that show, I worked on him along with some callers like Nick on the following show, and I finally got him to say, all right, maybe he'll sneak into the top. He's trying to tell me Herschel Walker was a better running back than
LaDainian
Tomlinson.
All right, so at least you're with me.
Well,
I thought I was the crazy one. I'm sitting here doing the show, and he's telling me that LaDainian Tomlinson is, like, overrated. I'm like, my goodness gracious. Okay,
and
I'm glad you're working on
it. We were talking about David Harris. The one thing I forgot to tell you, I was telling you a tackling machine, but durability. Speaking of durability, that guy missed, like, 5 or 6 games in his whole career, maybe.
That's true. But he's getting older, though. And, Nick, you never know once you get over 30 as a linebacker when that will change. But you're right. All in all, he's been a guy that's always been out there and playing.
I'm with B.J. Goodson. I think what I heard earlier is, you know, and plus hearing that, you know, AP's here, you know what I mean, to help him out with. He looks like he's in really good shape, stronger. He looks bigger, you know, and that guy can be a thumper, you know what I mean? I just hope he plays it smart. Now, about the Beckham thing, I called about it before, too, and, you know, what the guy was saying before. You know, a couple of things I agree with, you know, in the old school, you know, I'd like to see him there, too. And like the guy called earlier in the show, we all know what Odell Beckham can do, but he just he is what he is, you know what I mean? But look what he did. I was at that Atlanta game. He missed that whole year, you know, all this stuff we're talking about right now. And I remember telling the people in the stands in my crowd, I said, get your cameras out because you guys are going to witness this kid's first NFL touchdown. And I was absolutely right because he's phenomenal. But off the field, on the field, the things he does, you know, I think he likes the attention. And a lot of people don't like that, I think. But to me, as long as he doesn't drop touchdowns in the end zone whenever you're playing Green Bay in the playoffs, you know, that's what gets me upset. Other than that, if he's not there tomorrow, it shows how selfish he is.
Well, Nick, here's the thing.
Then we know something's going on.
Nick, and here's what I always say. Whenever we have these like little controversies off the field and stuff, my answer is always the same. If it's the team, winning solves everything. If you're the player,
exactly.
Production and playing well solves everything. If you take care of business on the field, the stuff off the field, for the most part, there are some exceptions to the rule, obviously, that, you know, result in suspension and things like that. Odell hasn't had any of those situations, really, except for the one.
Let's hope he doesn't.
Exactly.
We know how emotional he can get, though, you know.
Yep.
I think he can be his own worst enemy. And I think a lot of people just want to see him like what the guy was saying before. I mean, I don't totally disagree with the guy. I think, and a lot of people want to see him be that face of the Giants. And I don't know if he wants to be here or not. I mean, like the guy was saying, I mean, what's he going to go to L.A. because he's with Iggy Azalea? He likes that crowd? I don't think so. He's here. He's going to play his heart out. But people would like to see him here with OTAs and all that stuff, but a lot of guys don't go to this stuff. You know what I mean? And he doesn't really need the work. We know what he can do.
That's right.
Let's see what happens when another guy catches 1,000, gets 1,000 yards on the team and a bunch of catches, and he doesn't get the ball as much. Let's see what happens then.
Thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
All right, Nick. Appreciate the call.
And it's about Odell that I think really transcends everybody else. I mean, is there anybody better in this league at catching an 8-yard pass and then running 80 yards for a touchdown?
No, I think he pretty much has set the tone in that department.
I mean most of
his considering he does it regularly. It's not like it's a flash here or there.
Maybe I'm overblowing it. 70% of his long touchdowns are catches and runs, not like
short passes,
bombs over the top generally. But I think because teams generally have a safety over the top of them, so it's hard to do that.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. He's special. He's a special player.
Well, and then when you have the safety over the top, what makes him so difficult is after he catches the short pass, he's so elusive, it's hard to get the correct angle on him to stop him, which we saw, to me, it's the Baltimore game. First of all, the corner slipped on one of them, and good luck leaving the safety on an island. But even the others, you're a safety. You're left all alone. Is he going right? Is he going left?
You're 1-1 on open field. You don't have a chance.
You don't want to deal with that. I mean,
you don't have a chance.
Look at even the touchdowns, which are still comical to watch, the ones that were called back against the Cleveland Browns on the returns. I mean, Cleveland's like going through deja vu all over again. It's like every time Beckham returns, it's like, all right, we got a second try here. We're going to bring him down this time. And they still couldn't do it. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to slow down a guy like that. You know, the other name that I wanted to bring up, and maybe he doesn't get put under the microscope as much because he's not in as big of a market as New York. But I feel like Antonio Brown, people have been critical of his behavior on and off the field,
sure,
too. So I almost feel as if, sometimes when one player steals the headlines, we focus in on that one player. But if you look at the NFL landscape as a whole, there's a number of wide receivers that are dramatic, they're emotional, they're flamboyant. And it's just a matter of who's stealing the headlines today versus yesterday. The other thing that I wanted to throw out, too, is, and for all of you old-school Giants fans, just imagine if social media existed in the 80s when you had, some of the other big-time Giants teams with all of these big-time personalities and the scrutiny that those players would be put under. So it's all relative to the time period in which the player is in the NFL and showcasing his skills, because I guarantee you we'd be hearing, all types of stories back in the day.
We have two more calls. We'll get to you in a second. But before we do that, I want to remind people of the BBK schedule the rest of the week because it is different. Practices are all in the middle of the day with media availability, so we're kind of shuffling things around here. The only two shows at noon this week were today's and then on Friday because the players are gone. Me and Jeff will be on at noon. The other three, we're moving around a little bit, all right? Tuesday, you got this guy and Dottino. That's going to be at 11 o'clock, okay? Wednesday, same deal. Except it's Dottino and me, 11 o'clock. Thursday, it'll be Dottino and Feagles at 1 o'clock. And then, as I mentioned before, Friday will be me and Feagles at noon. So you get twice the Feagles this week.
Very nice.
Double Feagles.
And we test the next caller if they can review and read back to you all the times of every show.
And also, Lance has something better to do. So he's not going to be here Wednesday through Friday. He's abandoning us for, so he can, head out to his fancy golf tournament and, hang out in the Midwest in fancy Milwaukee.
Yeah, exactly.
You and your,
me and my fancy everything. Yes.
I
could be flamboyant, too. If the paparazzi wants to follow me around, I'll show them flamboyant.
Did you have, a golf outfit ready to go? Like the high socks and, the Payne Stewart hat?
Yeah, I'm not that type of guy. I mean, I got the golf apparel. I got the gloves. I got the golf bag and everything.
I don't
know if I'll be able to fit in any of that, but
they're not going to stick you in a suit out there in the heat, are you?
No.
What, khakis and polo?
Yeah, khakis and polo. Okay, correct. Good. Yes, that'll be the apparel that will be showcased. Yes. Sponsorships are still being negotiated. We don't know whether or not it'll be Nike or it'll be some other aspect. We're keeping that on the down low. We'll keep you posted on that front.
201-939-4513. Let's go to Leo in New Milford. He's up next. Hi, Leo.
Good. How's everybody today?
Doing great, Leo. What's up?
I want to talk about the offensive line. And, John, you touched on it right in the beginning of the show, saying, look, this week is going to be a little bit of what's been going on, except it's mandatory. There'll be a little bit more hours. And with the offensive line, it really is the domino effect. We got to figure out who's playing where and who's going to start.
Hey, Leo, here's the bottom line. I literally asked the offensive line coaches on Giants.com to his face after he answered another reporter's questions. I said, so, Coach, you're not really going to know about where these offensive linemen are and if they're and how they've improved until you see them in pads in August, right? He goes, absolutely right. So until we see that, we're not going to know a damn thing about what's happening up front.
The only thing, though, that Solari did point out, and I thought that was a very relevant question, is he mentioned, though, the conditioning that they're going through
Correct.
Now is going to help them in terms of when you get to the fourth quarter, perhaps being in a better position to deal with the pass rush. But you're right.
And also,
are going to dictate a lot more.
And you also teach technique now, but you have to translate that technique to full speed and pads, which is anybody in slow motion can put their hands in the right place. The question is, can you do it when the guy's coming at you at a million miles an hour?
You know what? This may not be a great analogy, but I'm going to go to basketball. There was a play where Curry, he danced around LeBron James in the NBA Finals and then finished on the layup, if you recall, earlier in the series.
You mean when he committed a double dribble?
Yeah, but the people that pointed out that he committed the double dribble had to put it in slow motion and pause the video. No official in their right mind is going to see that at full speed. So that, to me, is a fair analogy.
Separately, and then, Leo, I know you've never had the chance to do this, but even if you go to, like, a shoot-around for, like, a collegiate team or an NBA team, you have these, like, centers that can't shoot outside of 10 feet in a game. In, like, warm-ups and practice, they're, like, shooting 7 of 10 from 3. Yeah. And it just being in the speed and in the competition changes everything. Now, as we interrupted you, Leo, continue your call, please.
No, ironically, I'm exactly one of those kind of people. I used to call it basket brawl because I didn't think it was foul. But when you look at what we're looking at, what I look at, our offensive line, you really need consistency, and our biggest thing is going into the season and not having people injured. And I'm not saying there should be pressure on Pugh or he has a lot to prove. Look, we want everybody healthy, and we want to see the best five guys out there. And there's going to be a little bit of changing and moving, and I think we have to be comfortable because, quite honestly, going against air is one thing. Going to the next level that we're at in that right or this week, where you have guys kind of moving through, you're going to see their footwork, you're going to see their hand placement, but quite honestly, leverage and resistance makes a big difference in that, and I've viewed that over the years.
Yep.
And that's when we're going to make our decisions. That's when we're going to see who's really there.
And Leo, let's be honest, you're not going to know until you see him in a preseason game either. Practice is
absolutely
great, but until you see
going
him in a game, you don't know.
Guys, you know what they're doing. You know,
their moves. Yeah.
You know their moves. And you start to almost, even if you don't want them to do it, you're going to anticipate.
Sure.
Yeah.
And you're going to pick up certain habits.
Absolutely.
Now, it's nice that we've got a diverse group of guys. It's almost like having a practice. It is a practice squad that you have so many different types of defensive linemen, and that does help them. But when you look at it, we've got six guys, I think, that have already made it. Maybe seven when you take Burt Jones, because, you know, Fluker's made it. You got our starting five, basically, from last year. And now you start to look and say, well, who else is going to make it? Biz Nwadi? From what it sounds like right now, he seems like he's a shoo-in. Now, how many other people do we have? Is Wheeler going to turn out to be the guy that some people are speaking about? But I think it's a good situation that we're going in, that, knock on wood, everybody's healthy, everybody can get out there and get the intermoving parts and relax, get to game three of the preseason to really expect a little more, because it's going to be a work in progress. And then that domino effect kind of goes from that line to start to move. Can we run the ball? Then Eli's not going to have as much pressure on him if we're able to run the ball, that he's going to be able to throw and have less turnovers. I mean, ball security
is
key.
Yep. Yeah. Leo, yeah, I think, and thanks a lot for the call. The show's about to end. We got to run. Good stuff. And I think you hit the nail right on the head. And it goes back to our Maurice, I think. You said if they're not top seven on offense, I'll be very upset. Well, tell me the offensive line plays, and I'll tell you if I think they're going to be a top seven offensive team.
Yeah.
I don't know how they're going to play.
And being a top seven offensive team is dependent on, as the last caller indicated, the run game, too. It's not just being a one-dimensional offensive squad with the pass.
It's all dominoes, just like you said. All right, final call of the show is Jay in Atlanta. Great call, Leo. I think you made some good points. Jay, what's up?
John, Lance, what's going on, man?
Go ahead, man.
How you doing? What do you got?
I'm gonna make it quick, man. All right, so we got all these weapons on offense, right? Is it safe to say that if Eli doesn't perform this year, then it's pretty much over with because he has everything he needs now?
Well, does he have protection?
I mean, I think the protection is there now. Don't get me wrong. It looked shaky last year, but I think we got the pieces to make it happen this year, man.
I think the only two questions you have, Jay, right now, in my opinion on offense, the running game and the protection. And those are the two things that I think the last couple of years you've had questions about, and I think we'll see this year. If those two things – if the Giants protect well, have a steady running game, the receivers are all healthy, and the offense still struggles, I think you need to submit that to, like, the Nobel Prize Committee to try to figure out why exactly things aren't working out.
Gotcha, I got you. One last thing, man. All right, the wide receivers. We got a plethora of wide receivers. Now, I want to say one person that made an impact last year, and I think he deserves more snaps this year, would be Tavarius King. And everybody's, you know, talking about Odell, but you got to think about it. Odell had thousands of passes from Eli. The chemistry is there, and he just needs to work with the other ones. And I feel like Tavarius King would be that guy to step up.
Jay, thanks for the call. Good stuff. And I think Tavarius King has been the guy to pick up Beckham snaps in practice. He's been running with the first group because Odell's not here.
Yeah, I mean, King, I think about the pass he caught against the Packers. You know, people think about all the mistakes that happened in that game. King had a huge touchdown that made it, what, a one-point game, I think, at one point?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that was a huge momentum turner. I think when his number was called last season, he delivered more often than not. And the other thing to remember about Tavarius King, which I think gets lost in the shuffle, John, compared to the Roger Lewis's, compared to the Travis Rudolphs and some of these other young guys, King is a proven veteran. He just had not been able to latch on with a team and hang with a team.
This is his fifth year.
Yeah, he's got a lot more experience than the rest of this receiving corps.
The one thing I want to see is what he can do besides utilize that straight-ahead speed to get open.
That vertical target.
Can he get open using other routes? You know,
that's fair.
Can he improve his special teams play?
That, I think, is more.
Those are all the types of things I think we're going to be looking for out of him. But I think it's going to be a fun competition between him, Rudolph, Lewis, and the other wide receivers here, the Norwoods, you know, the Powells, all those guys. And we'll see who managed to win that either last one or final two wide receiver spots.
Well, I certainly think it's fair to say 5 and 6, there's a battle. 1 through 4, you could, I think, make a case that an idea.
Well, will there be a 6? I don't know. Doesn't have to be.
There doesn't have to be, but I think in this day and age with injuries and what some of the guys on the roster have been through, and also you have some young guys that are a little bit, you know, unproven in terms of can they do it for more than one season.
Not the top four guys, though. Top four guys,
well, I mean,
you know Shepherd, what you get.
Shepherd, listen, as good as Shepherd is, remember, Shepherd's only been in the league for one season.
I mean, if he backslid, though, I think we'd all...
I'm not anticipating that, but the point is, I just think like anything else, when you have a young quarterback, you want at least to have some proven commodities behind
it. That's
fair. That's all I'm saying.
That's fair. Yeah. That's fair.
So that's why I would at least think before you maybe want to just hold on to 5 as opposed to 6.
Folks, live and entertaining show today. A lot of fun, very lively, good conversation, good intelligent conversation too at that. I thought we had a good swath of callers.
Absolutely.
On different topics today. Excellent job. So as I mentioned, let me recap one more time. 11 a.m. on Tuesday with Lance and Dottino. 11 a.m. on Wednesday with me and Dottino. 1 o'clock on Thursday with Paul and Feagles. Friday, back at noon with me and Feagles. That's your schedule this week on Big Blue Kickoff Live. It's mandatory minicamp week. We'll have coverage of minicamp all week long, including videos from practice, highlights, some inside the huddle type stuff. I'll have my practices reports every day. Dan Salmo will have his standout players. We have 3 days of media availabilities on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. So a lot of stuff. Make sure you stay tuned to Giants.com, and we'll see you tomorrow, everybody.
Have a good one.